Hello and welcome back to another review of Shogun Season 1, Episode 5, Broken to the Fist, written by Matt Lambert, directed by Frederick E. Otoy. I say Season 1 because there's a lot of buzz that this show is going to get a Season 2. Something that friends don't think is necessary due to the way it ended. I don't know how it ended, so of course, my initial response is, because I'm halfway through it, that sounds like a great idea to me. All I'm thinking of, if I was Sonata right now, and I've been trying to break into Hollywood, yes, he's had a couple of hits here and there with The Last Samurai, truly, and we've seen him doing his Samuel Jackson thing, just making that money. But not only does he have a producer credit in this, he has a starring role. Why would I not take more money to do a Season 2? Because there's a lot more story to tell, and it doesn't need to be particularly around this era. Because from what I know, from the history books, that there's really two big triumphs for the character that Toranaga is based on. And I think that we could easily skip to the second part of what I think that could be. I don't know. They kind of teased it in this episode where he has two true obstacles to his shogun status, right? The first obstacle being the regent, and the second obstacle being the emperor, who, if we recall, is supposed to take over once he comes into adulthood. And how we know the history books went, that doesn't necessarily come to fruition. So I do think that there is more, or you can even take it to a different era of shoguns. I think that this show could go into so many different directions that it could be like a spinoff and still be a Season 2. All I know is money talks, and if you are anyone of color in Hollywood and you have a success, you got to monopolize that shit because they don't give us much. I mean, not saying it hasn't gotten better in strides, but let's be real. And at the helm, producer, that's very rare. So if he got a deal where he got to continue everything he got and then some more money on top of that, I can't see, even if you ended this first season perfectly, not wanting to capitalize on that just from a career standpoint. I thought this was a really good episode. Not my favorite. I think that as far as things happening, it was more about John's character assimilating, but not assimilating. It kind of got a little, I'll be honest, love triangle-ish-y. And I'm not about that. I don't like love triangles. Although I was very surprised when I saw Bun Turl show up. Now, of course, we have to take points away for slapping his wife, but he did drink a lot of sake. I don't know if this has happened previously. I know, of course, realistically, I would be like, piece of shit, he hits his wife. But I'm also watching this show not in 2024 mindset. I'm watching this show at the time of where all women including probably John Blackthorne's wife that he completely forgot he had at home.
I'm not judging. I'm judging a little. I'm not going to lie.
Seriously, though, think about that, y'all. He cheated on his wife. She thought her husband was dead. He made informed consent decisions. Talking about, I don't sleep with slags. That doesn't necessarily mean I won't commit adultery. And I'm not excusing Bondaro's conduct at all, right? I know that at this time, all women across all globes were not treated like loving objects to their husbands to be. It's not believe it or not, prevalent story, but it certainly was the law at the time, right? So you can't sit here. I mean, even Torinaga, that she had to apologize to him for the fact that she was beat up, and he's not pissed for the fact that his translator was having a domestic dispute with her husband. It was, I don't need my translator being domesticated on because I need my translator. So I'm taking my personal feelings out of the scenario. And according to the custom and rules, there was a lot of things that happened at that dinner that certainly doesn't surprise me that Bontaro would react in such a manner. And he's also coming back from a very traumatic experience. Again, not an excuse, just talking about what led up to the events that happened. Before we jump into that scenario, because that's the love triangle scenario, I want to get the other things that I really, really liked about this episode, which was the conversation between Torinaga and his son, because he shows up with a huge ass army, because that's what he said was good. I said, I'll be back. And when he comes back, his son is all acting like he didn't do what he did. And he's just like, I'm going to keep catching your hawk for you. And after he thanks every time he thanks her for, no matter what her personal feelings are, right? She still does her job. Like, here's everything the Anjin said and did since he's been here, like I was told to do. And I'm still doing my job. And he gives the pheasant to him as a token of his gratitude. He tells her about how Bontaro survived, like it was a miracle that he survived. He was joined by Ronin. And then he talks to his son, who's like, I got it. Look.
You are the weakest link. Goodbye.
Then he said, I know you're upset with me. And that's why he called him a fucking child. It's like, not only were you played, not only can you not even see how you were played, nor can you stand in the authority of your own actions. You're sniveling. And even if you were like, this is the play I'm going to make, and this is why I'm making the play, then I might have had a little bit more respect for your actions and your agency, but that's not what happened. You basically fell into Yabushige's plan. It could have been his plan. It wasn't. But he knows that even Yabushige ain't even smart enough to come up with this idea, and peeps that his nephew Ami is the one that got in his ear. He also knew too much. It's Kiku. Either she's the spy, because he got more spies in that village other than that old man who is a samurai.
Plot twist.
But I'm wondering now if he's going to be more interested in Ami, because Ami at least seems to know what the plays are, and he ain't getting no respect from his uncle, and he wants a fiefdom from his uncle, but his uncle isn't the only one that can provide to him with that information or with that goal. So Naga Kato gets the curse out. Basically, you ain't shit. Your actions weren't shit. And right now, I need you not to call me father, but to call me or address me by my title. By the way, I've taken command from you, and I'm going to give it to the person that convinced you to do something stupid. And because Torunaga is smart, I think he definitely knew what he was doing when he gave it to Ami instead of Yabushige, who thinks he's in charge of it, or at least he was in charge of it alongside the sun. But now he gave it to Ami, so that could cause tension between him and Yabushige, as well as recognize Ami's potential. I was surprised that he brought him with him to go see the spy in the village. And he's like, these birds are damp. He's always taking care of his animals. He's like, yes, they are, but you also told me this is the place in which you would like them to be kept, so.
Congratulations, you played yourself.
He informs him that they're looking for a spy in the village. He offers himself up, but says, no, I still need you. Find someone else. And they found the perfect replacement, which was the gardener. And I guess that's where we really can go into what the rest of the episode truly was about, which was Blackthorn being jealous once he finds out that her awesome husband has come back, and she, clearly not happy about it, is feeling some kind of way. And not only that, they all have to live under the same roof, knowing y'all two is getting in the nasty. And poor Fuji in the middle of it, because she's trying to do her job. She's trying to respect her house, her authority. And the Haramato is, because they're calling him the barbarian still. And I love how she corrected Buntaro on that. Like, having a Haramoto is an honor, even though she may feel a certain way, or she did, and she continues to still have issues. It is her, like, they take it very seriously what their positions are. And she wonders if there's going to be a problem in her household, because this is his household. You guys are guests in this household. And it's my responsibility to look after him as his consort. And you acting like I don't know what you did the other night in his room. And this could blow up because we're dealing with someone who doesn't understand the rules, the concepts, the cultures. He dismisses it, and not only dismisses it, but turns his nose up at it. And it leads to a lot of unfortunate events that unfold due to these continued slights, which is why the women were eating earlier, because they knew they were not going to be able to eat at dinner, because it's going to be a tense situation. She wants to know, like, hey, if his life is in danger, you're going to tell me, right? Because in no scenario is Blackthorn, despite his continued, which I love him for it, don't get me wrong, his continued stomping around with what he believes is the right thing to do. He doesn't know, and he should tread lightly, though. If I had slept with someone's wife or husband and they missus came, I know I would not be, like, it would not, my first option be to antagonize them. But I think he was feeling some kind of way because they didn't want his pheasant. So he hung it up, and everyone was concerned about it. And he said the only words he thought to say, if you touch it, you die. But he was only meaning it in a, what's the right word for that? Facetious manner? I don't know. That might be incorrect. And then he made the stew. Well, first he shows up. He's dressed up all nice. He's got his swords. And he greets Buntaro. And Buntaro is being a little bit of a dick because he sees him like they all saw him at first. So he didn't have that whole moment of him sailing the ship and showing his own capabilities. All he knows is he can creep the vibe between this man and his wife, and he don't like it.
What the hell is going on?
Bentaro is Fuji's uncle. And she tried to disrespect her and she wasn't having it. And I appreciated that very much so. And she makes it clear that this is her house, though. She will do and she will take care of and do what needs to be done. And she prepares for dinner with that disgusting. She's like, don't have his shit touch any of our shit because that's going to contaminate it. But that's because Blackthorn doesn't, while he is learning the language and I like that, he doesn't seem to at all. This is my only issue with him right now, is understand, like really listen when they're trying to tell you to stop. This is not the culture. This is not the procedure. This is not how we do things here. Yes, you may fight up against that and that's normal, right? But at the same time, if you are doing it with someone else that is a stranger in your home, I would think I would at least need to know the things that I need to know, right? Like, okay, what do we not talk about? What do we talk about? What's the etiquette here? So I don't fuck shit up. So they all sit down to dinner. And at first he makes fun of him slurping because Bentaro, like I said, he was being a little bitch. Well, no. First, Blackthorn got mad because nobody wanted to eat his... wanted to eat his stew because they don't eat like that. They don't, like, the idea of what they consume in their body is not that. He's like, it would have been better with sherry. He even tried to give it to Marco, but the fact that he would give it to Marco before his wife, once again, he's outing himself. He's making it very clear, and his eyes do never really stray from Rico. Rico, god damn it. So that they start making fun of each other because he says he eats like a monkey, but then he goes ahead and mimics how he's eating. So he realizes that he's making fun of him in some capacity. So he makes fun of him for drinking sake out of this tiny little cup, but it's because they don't overindulge, especially samurai. They live up to a different type of code. They weren't even allowed to visit the pleasure districts. Like the whole system of Japan and how their hierarchy works from the high up down and how some people are not even considered people. Yeah, it's crazy, but I don't judge it because how can you? Look at the Viking culture. Look at the Christian culture. Look at how many things we've done in the name of our practices and beliefs and what we thought was right. Up until industrial 19th century, really, there's always been two sides of an equation, and poor people were not considered people, not by people of the upper echelons of society, not at all. They were not, no. So to sit there and pretend when you go to Japan that you're appalled at this idea is hypocritical, if that is the stance in which you would be taking. And then they both get into a drinking contest because he's like, well, I'm a man and I drink like this. And he's like, okay, I'll play your game. And he starts to drink like that. Fuji tries to keep the sake away. She's like, and please, for the love of God, toss this, whatever the fuck this is, stew in the ocean.
I am disgusted.
As both are getting drunker, things are getting out of control because he insists to hear about what he went through. Now, she did try to warn him. Like, look, he's tired and he has been through some shit. Honestly, he's been through more shit than Blackthorn's ever been through some shit. Blackthorn raided. This man fights and has fought in wars probably since the age of 13, because yeah, that's how young soldiers are put for samurai in the war. That's their life. So when they keep saying they live and they die, that's exactly it. They live for the day and they die, and hopefully it is one of honor and it has a meaning for them and their family. And so he really has been through some PTSD type of trauma. And instead of Blackthorn, because he knows he don't got no war stories to share, he tries to force the issue by making him force a story. And then he tries to chastise this man that you just slept with his wife about how he's treating his wife. Oh, gosh. Like I said, he was just too open with the fact that I have feelings here and she is the only person that could even talk to you, right? Yeah, no, it's just, it wasn't a good look. It wasn't a good look. And she was trying to get him to stop. Like, I get that you're talking about me on my behalf, but I'm a person and I don't need you to do that. But he was like, no, I'm a man. And we don't allow this in my country. I'm like, you're fucking lying. You do. And most of the time, if this was anyone else and you didn't have personal feelings for her, you would have walked on and said that that's their problem. That's their business. And maybe, just maybe, though, he really wouldn't be down for hitting women. John actually seems like that type of person. And I do love him for it. Don't get me wrong. I'm chastising him, but I do love that he is sticking up for her. He's just not doing it in the most tactful of ways. And then we get finally her backstory that her father was Akechi Jinsei, who had murdered the predecessor of the Taiko because he believed that that Taiko wasn't in the best interest of the people. But because he chose to take that action, it was a betrayal, and he was forced to execute all of his family, brothers, sisters, cousins, before committing seppuku himself. And Mariko, who was recently married to Bentaro, or was given away to Bentaro for atonement. No, because she said she was recently married and she wanted to join his fight, but on the anniversary, my husband commands me to live. Tell me why. And we know honor means a lot to them, and being alive is you're a walking reminder of the betrayal. Seppuku is the way in which they retain their honor. So she wants to die. And that's the dark thoughts I think she was talking to the priest about, this continuing desire to exit this world because I want to continue the fight that my father continued. Like, that's part of what they believe in. And later that night, when she's assaulted and Bentaro ends up leaving, he or she curses him out for coming into her room. She yells at him for even trying to comfort her. Like, what the fuck? This is between me and my husband. I didn't want you seeing me this way. I didn't want Fuji seeing me this way. Fuji, poor thing, is like, I tried to stop him. He doesn't listen. And then she's also upset because this is like, you and your husband have brought shame to my home. So now I'm in the middle of this shit. Like, I gotta side with my Hatamato. So he goes out to find Bentaro because he wants to fight him for his actions. But Bentaro does what would be the right thing to do in that scenario, is that he offers apology instead of fighting him because he disrespected his home and he blames it on the sake. Of course, he looks enraged because he came out wanting vengeance because he feels like that's his girl and you don't have any right. And like I said, sir, you're not on the right here. Even if she is in a relationship married to a man that she doesn't, well, as she says it, like, we shouldn't be seen together. Clearly, he knows what's up. You're not hiding shit. Like, you let it all out the bag. Secondly, you don't get it. And you can't get it. You don't have the capacity to get it. You think freedom is everything, but you can't escape yourself. And yourself is a whole lot. And also, you continue to roll your eyes at our practices, but you don't understand that there is a great deal of respect underlining all of those practices. And the respect being exactly what Buntaro did. He could have just fought him and said, bitch, you just fucked my wife? Because in England, y'all would have been stepping away from each other and shooting. But here, he's like, no, I did wrong. I'm going to own what I did and offer what it is that I need to offer. She tries to reinforce the eightfold fence analogy once again. He doesn't agree with that. But she's like, you don't have to agree with it. I don't give my husband anything, not even my hatred, because that is what he merits. So how I handle me and mine's, you don't have the right to come in and decide that. Then he goes back home. And this is another disrespectful part for Blackthorn, which led, unfortunately, to the death of his gardener. And at least he understood at the end that it was his fault, because they kept asking him and asking him and asking him, can you do something with this bird? There was flies in the house. They don't like that shit. He didn't think to take the time and hear and listen to what they were saying. He was too busy chasing Mariko around because he caught feelings, which is understandable. She's gorgeous. But he also, like I said, has a consort and a home and people who answer to him, and they're asking you questions and you're like, go away. I don't want to deal with this right now. So when he comes back, they all crying because he looks over and he sees that the pheasant is finally gone. And then he's like, well, it doesn't really matter. But it bothered the villagers. And because it bothered the villagers, there was a meeting called. If he would have taken the time and listened to what they were saying, then he would have known and gave him permission to take it down. But instead, it became a village issue. And then the village is like, look, we got to take this shit down for the good of the village. But because he said, anyone touch it, they will die. The gardener, who was already dying, was like, well, I'll take care of it. And then I will take the necessary punishment, because it was for the betterment of the town. And he gets mad at them and then goes to see Taranaga being like, I want to leave permanently. I'm taking my folks with me. Give me my shit. I don't like this shit going around here. He really was talking about, because Taranaga said, there's a shadow on both of you. What is the problem? And then as soon as he hears about the gardener, he's like, I don't have time for this shit. Fucking kids. And John finally realizes that I'm the person that got that old man killed because I was not listening. And we told you the night before, you need to learn how to listen. Stop walking around with your own egotistical idealism. You are forced here to think about the next person and the next person and the next person when you're thinking about your actions. Your words have meaning here. Even though you didn't care about the pheasant, unfortunately, you have power here. You have authority here, and you have to utilize it in a responsible manner. And right as that's happening, there is another earthquake, which ended up burying Taranaga in a huge landslide that came at the village as well. Blackthorn ends up saving him with his son. I don't know if I want to give him all the credit. Like, he found him, but they were all right there. But But the kindness was giving him the swords and finally understanding that a samurai cannot walk around without their swords. Like, it's very important. I love the backstory about those swords, too. Like, her father was a coward. We bought those swords and told her a story. And we do that because we love her and it's to her merit. So everyone makes sacrifices here. It is about your honor. That means everything. It is a representation of yourself. And you don't have to agree with it, but it is exactly what it is. And I think him finally putting two and two together, that the reason why they were all searching through the dirt, Mariko, particularly for his swords, is because it matters. Like, he's naked without them. So even having black thorns, he thanks them. And then they see that the village is fucked up and he goes back home to his wife as he should, even though he didn't stay there with her. And I was kind of mad about that. I know she's not his wife. She's his consort. But Fuji also deserves better merit from Blackthorn. So his irony, or the irony of it all, is that how he wants Buntaro to treat his wife is how he should really treat his consort. And I don't think that pat on the shoulder when she's clearly injured. Because you need to go make a place. I get it, though. He felt bad for the gardener, so he wanted to finish putting up the stone in honor of the fact that he was executed for disobeying his order. The good thing, though, because he died, he also is set up as the spy that they were searching for. So Yabushige and Omi can no longer be searching for a spy in the village. A little bit what's going on in Osaka. After escaping, everyone's like, yeah, we should impeach that motherfucker. Ashido's face.
God motherfucking damn, I'm tired of niggas, god damn it. I'm tired of niggas.
I'm glad we're aligned now, but we need another replacement on the Regent Council. And after a comedic list of names thrown out in which one insulted the other's cousin, none of them can agree on who they actually want to be the replacement on the council. Not to mention, they all mysteriously get sick and are no longer there to address the matter. And then Lady Achiba shows up. I knew she was a problem. I knew she didn't like Toranaga either, because the look she was giving him walking out the room, I thought they had like a relationship, but no, she looked like she can't stand him. And she makes it very clear after reuniting with her son that the council is now about to listen to her because the time for politics is over. She's ready to take action. And since I know her history, I'm like, girl, how they gonna do you in this show? I'm curious. I'm very curious. I do have notes that I could discuss, but they're all the way across the room. And yesterday, I just got out of the 12th circle of hell when it came to this migraine. So I don't feel like going over there and getting them. Maybe after the feedback. Because we do have feedback. Let's hear what Mimi has to say in regards to this episode.
Mail, motherfucker!
What up, Stina? It's Mimi. This is my feedback, finally, for Shogun Episode 5. I really, really enjoyed this episode. It was, like, action-packed, and, it was full of surprises, and I don't know. It's my favorite. I think I'm gonna have to start recording before I get in my car, because I think this app updated. I don't know if I need to look for another one, but it's been giving me some problems. I am on my way to an appointment, so hopefully I can get this done and sent off since I'm already behind. But I am caught up, so that's exciting for me, at least. I'm going to watch another episode of Shogun tonight so that I'm ahead. I don't know if it's because I'm getting close to my vacation, but I just I'm getting real antsy lately, and it's hard for me to sit still, and I am behind with a lot of things. And then Derek has a lot of school functions going, and that's the one thing about 13-year-olds, you know, I'm starting to realize, like, they don't need much from you, but the stuff they need is very time consuming. They need all your money. They need you to drive them everywhere. And it's very annoying. And then they want your attention when they want it, but not when you want to give it. Just, I need to tell you this story because it was so intriguing to see Derek in a setting around his friends. But last week, Saturday, I did a chaperone. It was called Music in the Parks. It was like band students all over Illinois came to Great America, which is our Six Flags, to like perform and compete against each other. And there were, I think there was like one elementary school there and a couple of high school kids, but mostly it was middle school kids. And I just wanted to be able to see Derek, you know, perform. And I think it's important, especially as a Black parent, to be seen by the school and the teachers, because one thing they're not going to do is play about my child. And I feel like when they know you, it gives you a privilege that most Black people do not have. I could be wrong in that belief, but it's something I'm going to stand 10 toes down on. That's neither here nor there. But I was around him and his friends, and it was so intriguing to see, because he doesn't act like that around me. But I do think he's a good kid, so I'm not going to be talking shit as much as I usually do. Anywho, back to this feedback. So I finally got a couple names down. Omi, I'm assuming, is the guy. That's what the caption said. He's the one that I feel like been toeing the line. And I listened to your feedback for one of them. I'm still behind, but I'm going to catch up before I send my next feedback. And you're loyalty isn't something that's realistic, and that's true. But I will say that, like, I'm a big person on loyalty. Who knows how loyalty plays a part in, you know, across timelines and across generations. But he is definitely toeing the line. And I think Torunaga can see that. Like, he's not stupid. But he also knows that he needs him. So I do appreciate that. The fact that he had the spy in there the whole time lets me know that he's not very trusting. But he says that all the time. He doesn't even hide the fact he's not trusting. The other thing I liked, I love, oh my God, why can I not remember her name? She's the interpreter. I love this scene about her, but the face she made when she saw her husband was alive, it made me, because I just recently seen a clip of it, and it made me think of from The Walking Dead, Lori, in season one when Rick showed up. It's such a stark contrast between how Michonne saw Rick for the first time when she thought he was dead, and she saw him, like, her reaction was so different from Lori's, and it was probably the guilt. But now I am absolutely convinced that that was her in there with the English guy. I forget what his name is. I know he has a first name, John, I think, Blackthorn. I'm probably by myself with this, but I think he's so weird looking. He's not attractive. He looks, I feel like in real life, he would be a 4 out of 10. Like, he's not an attractive man, at least not to me. But it is something I think that the interpreter sees in him. But I am absolutely convinced that was her in the dark messing with him. And she was like, well, my husband dead. And nobody got to know. And I ain't even mad at it. But, you know, her husband, I knew he was, I don't know why, I just knew he was alive. The way he went into battle, like, he wasn't even afraid, just let me think that. I was like, yeah, I don't think homeboy is dead. And then for him to come back, that's a pretty miraculous recovery, considering how outnumbered he was. Now, I'm not saying he corrupt, but he might be. I just don't buy it. I could be 1,000% wrong, but I just don't believe that he is fought his way out of that. I just don't. Anyway, I just, one thing I will say about John is, like, I think he's arrogant, and it's something, and I always contribute it to be an American, because I think that we're arrogant as well, and that's including all of us, Black people too, but I think this is more a white man type of thing. For him to, like, be so fucking, like, obtuse about their rituals, like, he literally said, don't touch the pheasant or die. And then when she explained that you told them not to touch it or they would die, like, she didn't have a choice, why did it take you so long to put that shit together, that was you who sentenced him to death? Don't say shit if you don't really mean it. Like, words have fucking meaning. And she, for her to, like, when she said, you know, you put meaning into that, like, you did this. And then when Torunaga was, like, so, like, irritated, and he was like, oh my god, I do not have time for this. It was so funny. It looked like two, like, children arguing, and their parent was like, fuck, y'all get on my goddamn nerve. The way he walked away was hilarious. I don't think it was supposed to be a funny scene, but I was cackling. But he, like, he irritated me with the whole, your stupid rituals. Don't y'all have a queen? And y'all still have one because of ritual and tradition? Shut the fuck up. Like, sir, just because it's a tradition or a ritual you do not accept, don't mean it doesn't have meaning. And you can't be putting words, life into words, and be surprised when they actually have meaning. They told you what your status was, and they told you they had to obey you. And for you to take that long to put two and two together, sir, that's your problem. And, you know, it's commendable that the gardener was like, look, this pheasant is rotten, it's stinking, it's death, it's destroying everybody, guys. I'll take one for the team. That was pretty noble of him. And it sounded like he was willing to do it for everybody. And so he had a noble death. But for him to be shocked and appalled, and it takes so long for two and two to click together, really, really struck home to me. The other thing that really, like, I think I enjoyed the most was when the interpreter, she was talking about the tenfold fence, and, you know, and then she ended up saying, we live and we die, that's the only thing we have control over. I mean, that's the only thing we know for sure. She said something to that effect. And then, not even minutes later, an earthquake hits and knocks everybody on their ass. And that earthquake was not a joke. That shit was rocked that fucking land. And it just, to me, was, like, perfect. Because it goes to show, like, y'all can plan all you want to. You can do whatever you want to do. But in the end, the earth is going to win. You don't have control over your own death, whether you think you do or not. You don't have control over your own life, whether you think you do or not. Doesn't matter how powerful you think you are, at the end of the day, you're just a human on this rock floating in the space. And I think that when people put life into perspective like that, I think things wouldn't be in the, like, the state that we are. And I think I'm just being cynical, because, like, it's just life is just life, and like it don't make no sense. Food is so expensive, and then we have, like, these arrogant white rich men making speeches about women being stay-at-home moms. Like, first of all, if you want that kind of life, then I'm gonna need y'all to make it back to when life was in the 1950s, when you could raise a family of fucking five off $1,400 a year. Okay, I know that's an exaggeration, but I'm pretty sure they used to make like $14,000 a year, and that was considered middle class. Like, I literally saw an article saying, in order for a person to be, and it just said just a single person to live comfortably in the year 2024, do you know they got to make over $100,000 a year? Are you fucking stupid? How many people make that much money? So you're just saying we all struggling. There ain't even no middle class now. You're like, if you're making, because I feel like Darren and I are doing really well. This is more than what money I could have ever imagined us making between the two of us. And we're still only considered middle class. If this had been 15 years ago, we would be considered like upper middle class people. And then, like, you know, we're trying to build generational wealth so Derek ain't walking around here broke if something happened to us. But, you know, life is just so rough. And then when you, like, look at shows like Shogun, or when you see things like, you know, The Walking Dead or, like, The Last of Us, things like that, it just, I feel like it puts things in a different kind of perspective, and it makes you realize, you know, we are all focusing on the wrong things. And I remember you said a long time ago, the earth will be fine or something to that effect, you know, about like pollution and all that stuff. I'm starting to think that you were absolutely right, ma'am, because it seems like the earth is fighting back because they're sick of our shit. And I gotta be honest with y'all, I'm on earth side. On this one, I'm on the planet side, because we are squandering everything over shit that don't even matter in this life. I hope we get it together before it's too late and the sea creatures take over the planet. I don't know why I feel like the sea creatures are gonna rise above, but I do. But I've always wanted to be a marine biologist. It was one of those dreams that I just unfortunately wasn't in the right environment parenting wise to foresee, but I've always loved the ocean, so I'm rooting for them. I think that's all the points I have right now. I will end it here. Until next time, love, peace, hair grease, and black girl magic. Queen of the Couch, Mimi out.
Thank you, Mimi, for your thoughts on the episode. I agreed on a lot of your points. As far as the middle class, that's definitely disappearing. But we knew it was going to happen. That's really my response. I'm not going to elaborate on it, because it's just, that's a Jones Chronicles type of thing. I will say George Carlin is the one that led me to the path. That, hey, the earth's going to be completely fine. It's the people that are fucked. And not even all of us. Let's be real. Some of us will survive, just not the majority of us. And the people that will survive will not be the people that are doing the most right now. That's for damn sure. Also, that's what Maya wants to be, a marine biologist. That's her intentions. In regards to the episode, some of the commentary, yeah, I'm so about, like, you can't really judge another culture on anything seriously. There's a lot of things that, you know, you think about how people are executed for believing in imaginary beings. I don't want to get too deep into it, but that was a thing for a long, long time. And since that was a thing, I don't think anyone can point and talk about anyone else's culture. Because I've always said, there's also a benefit of knowing what your life is, what your role is, and it never changes, and it's that and death. I mean, with all the chaos, you know, democracy is still a new thing, and I'm not saying I'm not for it. I'm 100% for democracy. I will always stay 100% for democracy. But to pretend like you ain't looking over at other cultures or countries where some of that democracy is taken away and they have, I don't know, better homicide rates or better crime rates or certain things, there's always a give and a take with everything. And while I love democracy and I think it's the best one we've come up with thus far, to say that it is the perfect solution, clearly it's not. And in regards to John, he is very much still about his own goals and ideas. He's not willing or allows himself, even when he was trying to show them the food from his country, he didn't respect at all that. Like, I got the, you know, because it's hard. You're homesick. You want to impart something that they may, you know, like, but you gotta respect. It's almost like offering a bucket of bacon to a Muslim. Like, well, I eat bacon at home, even though you don't eat it. I do, and I want you to partake in what I like, even though that's totally against what your culture is. You know what I mean? Putting it in that perspective gives you a better understanding of why. Because I can already see, and I wonder in the reactions, that, you know, a lot of people are probably going to be on John's side throughout most of this interactions, and I don't think that that's a fair assessment. From what I've seen thus far, a lot of John's antics are taken in stride and not criticized, and then makes him endearing. And while, yes, there are some qualities that are endearing about him, there are others that very much remind me why why I personally wouldn't want 300,000 of these men stomping around my shores, because they don't have that respect. They immediately side with, oh, I'm not against that. It's a rejection of versus an acceptance and a navigation through. And Buntaro, he could turn out to be a spy. He could turn out to be working for Ishido. But he wasn't by himself. He did point out that he escaped because he had other Ronin with him. And he wasn't alone. Like, he had, Tarunaga had other men in that thing. He was just the only one that was running towards the boat. And then it looked like he got everyone else away. But there's nothing to say. Yeah, like, he hooked up with some people, and it's been like 6 months. And made his way to Edo, and about time he got to Edo, there was only two Ronin and himself. So they went through some shit. And I, from what I can see in that story and in his eyes, it looks like he is a man that's been through some shit. Like, I keep saying, I think that he is the epicenter of what it means to be a samurai. Whatever you feel about his personal character, a man that beats his wife is never a man that's going to be cool with me necessarily in my book, but we don't know. Does he beat his wife all the time? Or really, was it the sake? You know, he wasn't used to binge drinking that much, and his temper and trauma and everything. I mean, how many men come back from war and beat their wives? Vietnam much, and then get no help for it because they're told that being strong is how you're supposed to suck it up. The male culture, the samurai, all of it's got problems, man, that fuck up the people. Even to this day, I mean, we have still in this culture of men who never got help, who raised boys who unfortunately were victims of their very fucked up fathers, who then continued on a cycle. And now men can't even cry in public without being considered less than a man. I think it's getting better, but yeah. And I'm so glad you said it, girl. I never thought John was attractive. I thought it was just me. Every time he's with Mariko, I'm just like, you deserve so much better than him. But if that's what you want, hey, you know, it's your choices. But yeah, I don't find him in the least bit attractive. Half the time I find him to be a bit of an adult child. And she, man, you gonna bring up the Lori look. She definitely had that guilt. Like, ooh, this ain't good. And I think that they have a relationship that we haven't really delved into yet. And I hope we get more of why he wants her to stay alive. Does he genuinely actually love her? Or have feelings for her? Or feels a certain, maybe he knows something more about the story in the past? I don't know. But, yeah, that's a question to be answered. And I think they may have a moment between them. Hopefully, I want them to have one where John's not in the room, because I think that she has a son with this person. So whatever their relationship is, it's one that involves a child between them. So maybe John should consider writing a note to his wife and child. It's probably two children, one he didn't even see. That's the thing, the hypocrisy. I'm so concerned about this one woman, but you do have left one at home who is sitting around lonely and living a life of honor towards you, and you're a ghost. And then lastly, I too value loyalty. That's not to say I don't value loyalty. I just think that if you step into the game of politics, that's like, you can't, like, I just don't believe that that's an expectation to have 100%. And I think we could talk about the kid later, because that would be another 20 minutes. And I did say I had notes, and I don't want to go over them right now. So we'll go over them in the next episode. It's just, and it might be considered spoilers, and some of it, some things that I was learning about the courts and this, that, and other thing through real life history. So yeah, we'll save that for later. If you want to send feedback, quackercouch@gmail.com, or you can leave a comment below on this podcast. My social media will be there as well. Like, share, subscribe. Until the next time, peace, hair grease, and lacquer magic.